insolvency, that's just because the markets are going to collapse en masse from confidence alone. Not just the insured bonds. The reason why we're saying $49 trillion worth, everybody, is that when all these bonds, the insured ones, have gone and they drop in value, that's just going to make people even more frightened of what they can and can't buy, what they should and shouldn't be buying, and everybody's going to stop buying. And we've seen that now with, did you see the student loans, Darryl?
No.
In the United States, they have these loan, they have these bond auction securities.
Yeah, Sally May. Mm-hmm, Sally May.
Yeah, yeah. And they do it even for trying to raise money for student loans. It's the, you know, there's lots of stuff financed on that market. In the last round, it's terrible for you know, students in the United States. In the last round of bond issues, there was 100% failure. 300 attempted bond issues failed, every single one of them out of 300. And it means that they've been unable to raise money for student loans for the next financial year. I mean, it's just everywhere.
Well, now here's what they've been trying to do in parallel to the nightmare in the bond market, which, ladies and gentlemen, is just a harbinger of terrible things to come. But they've been trying to monetize the sickness within all these financial markets. But what I mean by that is you can inflate your way out of your debts. If you've got, let's say, $10 and you owe $10. But in the meantime, you inflate the $10 you have in your possession to be $100, and you pay back that original $10. What you've done is you've monetized your debt, and the person receiving its $10 payment is only getting 1/10 of its value. Now, understand that again, Mohammed. Do you have a better explanation for that? When you monetize debt by using inflationary forces? But basically what you're saying is that any type of fixed payment, and ladies and gentlemen out there on a pension, you listen up, your pension has gone down by 15-20% in the last year in ability to buy you food, clothing, and shelter. The point being is that all of these fixed payments that you don't have a way of receiving the lost value in some other part of the deal, you've been monetized out of the value of the payment. And so what they've done here is, with sleight of hand, using inflation, cheated people out of their value. And that is one way of slowing down the complete implosion, but certainly is not going to stop it, is it, Mohammed?
Well, putting more money into supply isn't ever going to work. You can maybe cover small debts, a few billion dollars here and there. But we've got massive losses going on here. And when you think that the whole credit-based system of putting money out, like you say, as a debt, putting money into supply as a debt, which is what this mechanism was all about, there is a very simple formula for understanding this now. M equals D, where we say the money supply equals debt. So what we're saying is that all the money that we have in circulation is put into circulation as a debt, D.
Yep.
So we lend out as the Fed, because we've been given permission to do this by the government. The government shouldn't be doing it, and I'm not saying this is correct by any stretch of the imagination. I think it's entirely wrong, but we're just explaining how it works. The Fed, or whoever has been legally allowed to create money in the United States, puts that money out there, I don't know, $1 trillion, and it has an interest rate of 3%. Now, the money supply is $1 trillion, because that's how much money has been put into circulation as a debt. And that debt needs to be repaid back with 3% interest. And it begs the question now, well, hold on a minute, if there's only $1 trillion in supply at all, where's this extra $30 billion in interest going to come from? So they actually have to start issuing even more money into supply in order to balance that. And so the formula becomes money equals D plus I, the rate of interest, and that formula is balanced by R, the rate of inflation. So what happens is, in reality, and what people are never told, John Maynard Keynes explained this in Money, Whence It Came, Whence It Went. He said that as soon as you put money out into supply as a debt, you're creating inflation. The interest on it alone will create inflation. And what they're doing at the moment, Darrell, is, you know, creating money hand over fist to bail these in an already distorted marketplace. They're creating money as a debt to bail out these banks into an already over-indebted situation, which means that as they put more and more debt money out there, there's more and more interest has to be paid back, as well as the debt has to be repaid back, and the money supply has to counterbalance that. So they've actually created more inflation than should be in the system.
Now, that's a very good explanation. It does miss one element that Samuelson put out in his analysis of economics. The only way to countermeasure that growth in the money supply in the debt-based system is to have a change in your productivity that equals the expansion of your interest payment on the debt. Now, what we've got today, Muhammad, is a shrinking of productivity, not a growing. What we've got is manufacturing failing. We've got production that's inventory swelling, products not being sold, houses are not being transferred or bought. The point being is that not only are we not growing productivity, we are shrinking in the productivity. So there is a double whammy here where your interest that has to be paid at that $30 billion, in your example, not only is losing that, but the shrinking of productivity is adding to it. So
absolutely correct, Darrell. Completely 100% correct. That is the double whammy of the situation. And when we ordinarily look at the measures that are taken by professional investment companies to counteract inflation, they have all been undermined through this double-pronged attack on your current value of money. We see also going on at the moment a lot more of these mortgage companies that are collapsing.
Yeah.
Thornburg Mortgage Company, which is quite a big one.
Yeah.
In the States.
Countrywide. Another big one, Countrywide, over at Lehman's. Who's the big jerk that just went under and got bought by Morgan? I'm trying to tip my tongue. Anyway, the Countrywide, and now here's the interesting thing, ladies and gentlemen. On the way out the door, the manager of Countrywide gets a $60 million golden parachute for his company that went belly up just before it was transferred in ownership over to the ownership of Morgan. Now, here's the interesting thing, though. The shareholders of Countrywide and of what's the company? The big one that just went under.
Bear Stearns.
That's Countrywide Mortgage. That nobody that's holding any of their notes wants to sign off on this deal. Why? Because somebody's pulled the great train robbery over there. And I think they're just stealing from each other now. They're just pecking at each other's dead bodies, the corpses on the ground.
It's very much reached the vulture stage, and I think a lot of the banks are aware of that. Thornburg is the latest one to go as well, Darrell. Thornburg Mortgage Incorporated was struggling to raise $1 billion to try and keep five of its biggest creditors at bay, and they're just about to go. And the overall situation now for homeowners in the States, which I've been studying a lot more these days, and my sympathy goes out to them, is saying banks are so overwhelmed by the housing crisis there that they've started looking at other methods now for when homeowners stop paying the mortgages. And it's saying that the number of borrowers, 90 days or more, has risen 3.6% now since December. So, more and more people are falling behind. And what the lenders are doing now is they're saying to people who've fallen behind totally, rather than fully foreclosing on the property, what they're saying is, okay, we'll let you stay in there. And the analyst, this is causing a double problem. You see, the banks are saying to people, we're not going to foreclose because we've got streets now with five or six empty houses on them, and people have been rushing in and stealing the copper piping and the boilers. There was even one guy who he took a circular saw and tried to saw away the extremely valuable outside air conditioning unit for the house, which had been set in concrete, but he took a steel circular saw to it and cut it and took it with him when he left. So they've said, well, look, people have fallen behind. We might as well leave them in their properties rather than actually have them empty and allow people to come in and gut them. But on the downside to that, that sounds like a good idea in some respects, but the downside is that the professional analysts are now saying that this is causing a major problem because we've now lost sight of how serious the problem really is.
Yep.
He's saying we should be going through this foreclosure process so we understand what the real numbers of foreclosures are. But by the banks coming up with, and the lenders coming up with these policies of, okay, your mortgage is distressed, but you stay there and you become an unpaid landlord to look after this property. Apparently the banks have been losing 15% or more, not to mention negative equity, but even where negative equity hasn't kicked in now, where the property hasn't dropped in price, they've lost 15% where people have actually gone in and gutted the properties and done damage, you see. So, you know, because these guys, he said he took in a circular saw with the outdoor air conditioning unit by sawing the metal legs off its concrete apron. Saying people are taking what they want, that was a $1 million house. And they're saying people are taking these things because they feel as if they've been cheated by the banks and that they've lost out. They're saying, I've just got a $1 million mortgage and my home's now worth $750,000. You guys have cheated me. And off they go and they take the stuff with them. So the mess out there is just incredible. It's just incredible. Nobody understands how what the real rate of foreclosures is on it. It's so great that the banks have chosen not to foreclose and just said, you can live there without servicing the debt. Just stop anybody from breaking in and damaging the property. What situation? I've never seen this before now.
Well, this is only the beginning. And this is what I'm trying to get over across to people right now, is that the system of money that we all rely on is worthless. It is for all intents and purposes bankrupt. And if you're using the pound, the dollar, the euro, or the yen, it doesn't matter. Unless you're using a precious metal, I don't think you've got any value in your wallet, and not in the future at least.
You've got to be able to get hold of that metal, because the problem that we've been seeing on the net, and the one good thing about this crisis, Darrell, as we've explained to regular listeners out there, the whole bullion market has been heavily distorted for a long period of time with incredible levels of manipulation going on. But as more people are turning in sincerity to silver and gold, the demand that they've created in the States has just wiped out all these professional institutions, these shops and businesses that sell these metals as coins or as blocks or whatever. And these guys are waking up. The average man in the street now in America is waking up saying, hold on a minute, we can't get hold of silver coins at the moment. We can't get hold of gold bars at the moment. We're on a shopping list here, right at the bottom. They're telling us in 6 weeks we might have something for you. And in the meantime, the price is going down. There are unprecedented levels of demand for metal out there. And you're right, Dale, we need to encourage people to try and get some themselves, because the more people who turn to it, the more people are waking up to, hey, how can the price go down when there's a demand like this?
Well, and that's because what they've been doing is they've been putting leased gold out there for both sale and lease, meaning that you take physical delivery of a gold transaction. But when you go back to the shop to talk to the guy that sold you it, he's actually leased somebody your gold. So you're saying, hey, wait a minute, this is my gold. The guy says, I know, it's your gold, but we're also using it on our books as a lease agreement. And the guy says, how can you do that? I own this. This is mine. He says, well, we haven't put your sale in our books yet, so we're still holding it as a lease agreement with someone else. I mean, that's robbery. That's fraud. It's confidence man stuff. This is a grifter's paradise for these crooks.
It is a proper snake oil salesman all over again, isn't it? You know, you would. This is why people, as you've encouraged people previously, Dowell, they must, when they buy their stuff, if they don't take physical delivery, that they must get the certificate for it. They must walk away with that paperwork. We advise everybody out there, get the proof of ownership in your hand, because if these guys, if these SOBs go behind your back and lease your product off to somebody else, and they go Blair-shaped, they go bust, you could find yourself fighting over the ownership of that.
That's right.
And you'll need your evidence. But ideally, you should be able to walk away with it in hand. That's the ideal situation.
Well, let's talk about some other items here that are really causing, and I think this is what's going to be the ultimate nightmare for everybody. We're already seeing on the fringes, Muhammad, worldwide, a shortage of foodstuffs. And we're going to talk a little bit about the real reasons for this, and I think they're all intentional, in fact. We're looking at wheat and grain prices worldwide, and I'll give you one example. 2 years ago, a price for a bushel of corn was $1.75. Today it's $10. Now you can't imagine what that means, ladies and gentlemen. It means that cows can't be finished for sale. It means that you know, you can't feed your animals. It means that all kinds of stuff, but it's not just that. Similar products, when one product goes crazy, and you have to understand this, when one product like corn goes to 10 from 175, substitute products that are in the same class also start rising in, exponentially. We've seen that in sorghums and in grain prices such as wheat and the barleys, and there isn't a single class of grain that people need to stay alive that has not gone through the roof. And now we're looking at countries such as Bangladesh, and far-flung areas of Indonesia and Thailand and Vietnam are running out of rices because they were allowing their traders to export some of their rice because the other prices of grains were so high that rice prices started to rise. Now, some of these countries have made it illegal for local farmers to sell outside the country, fearing, and this is the big next step, fearing food shortages in these countries. Now we get reports in the last week that food shortages are beginning everywhere. Now let's talk for a minute here. I told you about this shenanigans in the grain futures markets, where the futures price was actually not reflected in the current price, which is an impossibility because your price that you have in that futures market should be reflected on the trading desk for the actual product delivery. And what was happening is they were closing at two separate prices, which is an impossibility. That's like somebody being in two places at once. And I saw this, and they said that nobody has an explanation for it, although it's going on. And the change in prices were not just a small tenth of a percent or something. They were significant. 1, 2, and 3 percentage points different. This is just sleight of hand robbery again, more criminality, more confidence game, more grifter kind of stuff. And what we're seeing as a result, ladies and gentlemen, is starvation is going to begin, principally starting in Africa because they are the weakest of our world, and then moving into areas of Asia because they are the next on the list. Of course, South America next. We're looking at Venezuela having food shortages, Ecuador, Bolivia. This is going to be a worldwide famine, and there is hoarding going on, Mohammed. There are the big players are now taking that rice and that wheat off the marketplace and putting it in their silos, knowing full well that they're creating further problems and starvation is on our doorstep worldwide. Have you been reading about it?
Well, I have been paying more attention to this subject now because it is going all over the place. These prices are going up, and it doesn't bode well for the future, the levels of failure. We had, quite disturbing for the American people, this flooding recently, didn't we, in Kansas and Arizona?
No, Arkansas.
Arkansas, and Kansas, that was it. And these areas are part of the wheat basket for the United States.
Yeah.
And what I read, Dowell, was fascinating but also terrifying at the same time, is that there's a particular point in the growth cycle of wheat where it's about the length of grass.
Yeah.
And apparently that's when wheat is at its most vulnerable.
Yeah.
And the recent flooding in those two states was exactly, it lasted for exactly that week of vulnerability. And the wheat was all underwater for 7 days, when it received no daylight. And also the artificial fertilizers and pesticides and everything that had been put in the soil to protect it was all washed away. And apparently the entire wheat crop in those two states for this year has now been wiped out.
Well, it gets worse. There is some evidence that a levee during a rainstorm let go in Arkansas and in parts of Kansas, where the floodplain that was permitted to, of that you're discussing, this wheat plain of growth, was actually flooded out by two destroyed levees. Now, they're saying that it was a failed levee due to natural reasons, but I don't trust that. And why? Because it's too opportune here. What we've got in other places, Mohammed, is for the first time since the 1930s, a rust fungus that is hitting wheat and grain crops worldwide at the same time. Now, we got hit with that rust fungus here in France last year, and it wiped out wheat harvests, it wiped out peppers, it wiped out potatoes, it wiped out beets, all kinds of different tomatoes were wiped out by this rust fungus. And now this fungus is showing up in all of the wheat belt of India, Pakistan, parts all of the wheat and grain eating areas, and including Africa. And I'll tell you right now, there is no way that is a natural event. I do not trust anything that this is natural. This is absolutely too bizarre an event to be natural. And we're looking at a nightmare here. And I'm saying to the people right now that, you know, you better start scrambling for that pack of flour in the local store, regardless of price today, because whatever you're going to pay for it today is pittance compared to what it's going to be tomorrow. What do you think, Mohammed?
Well, I certainly see that the commodity prices are going to rise. They are going to rise at the time for the American people when the dollar is buying less abroad. So for the Americans to become reliant on wheat internationally, as its price starts to increase internationally and the dollar drops in value, the purchasing power of wheat alone is going to be very, very poor this year. So this is how, of course, Darrell, what's famously described as importing inflation.
Yeah.
And here we've got something whereby, once again, the man in the street's going to be lied to about what his inflation rate is, because they'll be able to point at a bag of wheat somewhere in the United States and say, oh, look, that's only $2 a kilo, or $5 for 10 pounds, or whatever the pricing locally will be. But, of course, people won't be able to buy that physically. What they'll actually have to buy is wheat from another country with a devalued dollar, wheat which has gone up in global demand and which is now far more expensive. So the potential cost for getting that on the table in the States is going to be enormous. And if I was living out there right now, yes, I'd be getting out of dollars into something that's going to buy me better produce from abroad. And B, I'd be stocking up on some of that stuff anyway, because that price, it's got two levers on it now.
Yeah, and here's the problem that I think the Americans are not aware of. If, in fact, we end up doing, as many people now believe we will, in spite of our protests, in spite of our overwhelming support against the move into Iran, it looks like these lunatics, these Zionist criminals that we've identified over and over again, these what they call neocon crazy, are going to push us into an Iranian assault of sorts. And if that happens, of course, what we could be well seeing here, Mohammed, in the barrel price of oil, is it going from 104 up to 175 in a blink of an eye. Some have estimated that that could happen as early as this week, which to you and I meant, when I was talking to you about that report I had read, you were saying, maybe they are going to go for that thing. There had been other people saying it may happen on the 6th, which is today, but who knows? What I do know is that the oil price, if it goes up by 60 or 80%, you can kiss everybody's economy goodbye. Now, that doesn't mean that you'll be immune from it here in Europe, because you have all witnessed, in spite of exchange value of the dollar-euro changing, you have not saved a dime on your oil at the pump. I have watched, Mohammed, my price for diesel fuel here for your car go from 90 cents in the last 8 months up to 135, 140. Now, we're talking about 70% in just a few months, and that's only the beginning. I think if you're going to want to be driving anytime soon, you either better own a gas station or you better find a bus ride, because people cannot afford those kind of increases, Mohammed, in the cost of fuels.
It's gone up 30% here in the UK in the past few months as well, now, on average, in some places, some pumps even more than that. I think with the Iranian invasion, it does look a bit imminent. It would appear that Petraeus has been asked to return to the States as at today. He flew back late last night and is in the United States for meetings this week before he flies back to take control from wherever the new command center is out in the Middle East.
Yeah, but General Petraeus is who.
Yeah, Petraeus, as some people are calling him.
Yeah.
He's been called back home to give a report and to receive his orders, I think, now also. And obviously he's just spitting blood wanting to invade Iran at a time that he's already got his troops heavily stretched, all those poor American men and women who've been stuck in the desert for the past 3 or 4 years or whatever it's been to absolutely no purpose whatsoever except to put their lives at risk so that these maniacs can try and take control of the world oil. It's a great shame for them.
Well, my guess here is that along with, you know, I've always known that the financial mess would lead us into other problems, because as goes money, so too goes the rest of our world, and they're not going to allow the money problems to sit at their doorstep as them, you know, for them being to blame for the error. What they're going to finally do is stop pumping the idea that Islam caused all these problems, and that if we hadn't had problems in the Middle East, we wouldn't have been facing all of these terrible events. Now, that's a lie, of course, but what we know is that they will pump that lie for all it's worth, and ultimately we'll be neck deep in a mess. And I see this stuff as happening within days, if not sooner. And Mohammed, I fear for everyone. This is the most unnerved I have become since I began this quest of trying to tell everybody what's going on. I've never seen our world in this kind of condition in my lifetime, nor do I believe it has ever been in this condition in anyone's lifetime. We have seen implosions, Mohammed, in Russia, intentionally done by this group and other places, but this time we're looking at a worldwide failure. This is something that the whole entire globe is going to experience as this stuff starts taking its complete toll. What do you see in our immediate future, and what do you believe could come of all this? I don't want you to, you know, just to say blood and gore, but how bad can this get, Mohammed?
Well, the problem that we have, Dal, is that these guys now, the heat, the guys we've been exposing and that have been exposed all over the internet, the heat is on them, something terrible. They know that any maneuver that they make, there is now a very substantial portion of humanity that know who it is and why it's being done, no matter what they put in the mainstream media. They also have a clock ticking down in terms of they have a puppet in the leadership of the United States at the moment who will do anything they ask of him. As you were explaining to me, they've only got a few months left of that guy, and anybody new would need all re-grooming, and maybe they wouldn't have the same lack of moral conscience when it comes to mass murder. So I think that they're under a lot of pressure now to try and take everybody's mind off what's really going on. It looks like a conflict is the only way to do that. So I expect that to go ahead. It's not good in terms of global relations. It's not good for what it's going to do to commodity prices. It's not good for anything, really. We asked the question, who benefits? And the only benefit comes back to this crazy concept of the security of Israel. You know, for the security of Israel, we will plunge the world into further darkness and further insecurity. As long as those people remain in their position of influence, Darrell, this world will continue to go from one insane scenario to another to another. Until we nip it in the bud, until we strike the root, they will continue these kinds of activities. And the further that they get into it, yes, it is an old adage, Darrell, give them an inch, they'll take a mile. They've got that mile now, what will they take? Well, it'll be on the same ratio. It'll just get from more extreme to more extreme, and that's what we're seeing in the world. The reason you've never seen it to this degree before is because these people before had to operate behind closed doors pulling levers. Now they're in your face and saying, hey, you can't stop us. It's a very different paradigm to what it was 20 years ago.
Well, Olmert is actually in the Israeli criminal government. These homicidal lunatics in Israel are actually having a public security drill week where they're having people hide in bunkers and stuff, which, if, of course, everyone knows when we have these drills is when we have the real deal. It's happening this week. Syria has moved 3 divisions to the border with Lebanon in the Baqa Valley, knowing full well that Israel has every intention of invading. They've moved another couple of divisions and a lot of equipment down to the frontage on their already stolen land of the Golan Heights. We see Turkey poised right now to do a northern assault on Iraq. We see troops north of Iran, American troops and NATO forces, a lot of activity on the northern border of Iran. We see Diego Garcia, which is the island off the coast in the Arabian Sea. More flights going in and out of there than ever before, so they're preparing something. And then the French government lies to its public and says that six pirates, commandeered a huge 360-foot sailing vessel with tourists on board so that they have to send 2 battle groups into the Red Sea to make the pirates stop their actions. Well, the fact is, that was just a fraud to bring 2 huge naval task forces of the French Navy into position just south of Saudi Arabia off the coast of Yemen and in the Red Sea. So what we've got is an entire circled area of warfare getting ready to go. And if you can't smell that, smell the coffee as it's cooking, ladies and gentlemen, then you are just not reading the tea leaves here. This is what's happening everywhere, and I've just given you the scenario here, Mohammed. I fear for our world. I don't fear for our ultimate victory here because these people are more and more exposed every day that passes. They are not going to succeed at this. We cannot allow it. You and I and others like us will stop them, Mohammed.
I have absolutely no doubt that with the support of the listeners, we do have a requirement for the listeners to keep taking it into their face. We know that editors of newspapers are panicking and they're being confronted. They go out to do these panel debates and speeches, and people are standing up and saying, why are you ignoring all this information on the internet? People are challenging them. It does frighten. I'm aware of some people who confronted an editor here in the UK and actually left him in tears because they pricked his conscience, amazingly enough, because he knows these people are looking on the net. There are people listening to what's going on here. They know what the truth is, and they know they're hiding it from the mainstream. It's only a question of time. That clash is getting nearer by the day.
Yeah. Well, this file has gone on for some time, Mohammed. I appreciate the kind of insights that you bring to our discussions here. And I want to let everybody know that you were successful yesterday in presenting some information financially to a group, and kudos to you for your effort yesterday. And we're going to just keep doing this, Mohammed. I'm not going to stop till I can stop them. But I do want to remind people that I don't exist over here on air. I need help as well to keep giving these reports and these analyses. This is a tough one for me to ask people who have nothing. But I'll tell you something. We're all in the same boat, and if they shut me down here because I can't pay my bills, then we're just going to have one major voice quieted over here. So if you've got an extra dollar in your pocket, please don't forget about me. I need it. You can send it to the P.O. Box in Sweden, or you can send it through PayPal, whatever, $5. $5 is fine, $10. People do help out with small amounts. This is what we pride ourselves on in the French Connection, that this is a grassroots programming here. We don't have advertising on our site, and we don't have any other way of paying these phone bills and the rest of it. So please keep me in mind when you go sit down at a coffee bar for a cup of coffee. Think about that second cup for the French Connection, if you will. Mohammed, thanks again. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Darryl.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Darryl Bradford Smith saying to all of you, please, your families. They are the building block of society. They are the first line of defense against these crooks. Strengthen your ties to your family. Strengthen the ties you have to those you love. Be a great inspirers to these people, because in the days that come, we're going to need inspiration within family units, and we're going to need strength within families. Take care of them, especially you men out there. Be heroes to your family. And ladies and gentlemen, until the next time, please be well. Bye-bye now.
The last time I saw Janine, I recall when we were 17. I was a beau, 'twas not too long ago, but too short on all that long, long dream to satisfy Janine. Now she's gone from me, she's away from the old neighborhood. I'm sure she's gone for good. I saw Janine, the doll of sound stood in between. It was love lost due to rising costs, but since then I've never seen Janine. But every doll, but a little doll, but a little, 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 but